You're listening to Foresight, a podcast about making work better. I'm your co-host, Mark Edgar, a former consultant and coach who now works as a chief people officer on a mission to make work more human.
And I'm Naomi Teitelman, a former big firm consultant and HR executive, now striving to make work better one organization and one leader at a time. Every week, we'll discuss the latest trends that are impacting the new world of work to help you be a better leader for the future.
Welcome, everybody, to Foresight, a podcast about making work better. My name is Mark Edgar, and I'm one of your co-hosts, and I have the absolute pleasure of being joined all the way from Blighty, the UK, by Mr. Gary Turner. Gary, how are you? This evening, I think it is in your world.
It is this evening. As we record, it's just gone 8 p.m. Blighty time. So no, thanks for the invitation.
Great to have you here, and thank you for taking time out of your evening. What would you normally be doing at 8 p.m. on a Monday evening, Gary?
That's dare really I good. Ask. Yeah, I don't know if you want the honest answer or not, Mark, but no, it'd probably be lounging in front of TV or sadly still doing a bit more work or listening to podcasts like yours. So I'd be doing something. I struggle just to sit there and do nothing, if I'm honest.
Yes, I know that well. And it's a great segue just to give a bit of an introduction to the enigma that is Gary Turner. So Gary and I have known each other, I would say virtually for a fair while, but we did actually have the pleasure of reconnecting in person for the first time a couple of weeks ago at a conference that we'll get into. But Gary, your LinkedIn profile always fascinates me. You're very active on LinkedIn, which is great. It's kind of a great way of staying connected. But you share a lot of different perspectives on there about some of the work that you do. And you list in a very clever way, I think, a number of different things, including, not limited to, but including thinking partner, speaker, super connector, and community builder. So I guess I was hoping that you might be able to just find a way of explaining to our wonderful listeners what you're all about.
Oh, it's a million-dollar question, isn't it? Still working. I'm 47 years old and still trying to work it out, Mark, to be completely honest. So I'm throwing that many darts at the dartboard to see what happens. But joking apart, that is sort of 47 years of growing up and coalescing and realizing, you know, what matters to me, the sort of work I want to be doing. So in a nutshell, I'm someone that is very active at building community both inside and outside of the workspace. And I would say that thinking partner role is a similar thing again. So I tend to work with leaders of the local political party or within my local community group, as well as I work with leaders within the extractive industries, within chemicals, within manufacturing. So really, I really am seeking with that message, what I'm putting on LinkedIn, Mark, I'm really seeking to say, look, I'm actually really freaking complex. You can't put me in a single box as much as the workplace and organograms try and squeeze us into a little box. So I guess I'm really sort of celebrating and embracing that intersectionality of who I am and who I'm becoming. And they're the best sort of linkages that I can offer to the world to try and make sense of who I am while I try and surf through those different lenses. Probably hasn't helped you much at all, but that's sort of where I'm at with it.
No, it does help. I think it kind of does. I think that allows you to just both your perspective and also the role that you play, I think does allow you to create that connection for people. So from a very practical perspective, Gary and I haven't done this for a while, but from a very practical perspective, I catch up with Gary every couple of months and we have a call. And it's not a long call, but it's always a very kind of energizing call where we just talk about what's going on. And it's, you know, it's not necessarily, I don't think we've covered the what are you watching on Netflix type conversation or how's the weather in the UK at the moment, but we're able to find topics that are of interest and always come out of those conversations, as I say, feeling very energized and a bit more informed than I was going into the conversation, which I love. And I think that is because you bring both a very open mindset to everything, but also you have so many conversations with people and you're so well connected with a whole range of different people that just comes through in the richness of the conversation. So I love that. I love that opportunity.
Likewise. Thank you.
So the thing we met at, because this ties into the conversation we'll touch on a little bit today, Gary and I in the kind of behind the curtain view of how this happened, suspect that this conversation may go in a number of different directions. But one thing we did want to talk about was the conference that we were at together, which was called the Freedom at Work Conference that we'll get into in a second. But it acts as a good trigger for a check-in question, which we typically ask people. Not the same question, obviously. We're much more creative than that. So we always ask a different question. So the question for you, Gary, is what is giving you a sense of freedom this week? And I acknowledge it's Monday. And so you have the freedom. I'm gifting you the freedom to think about what that week means.
Well, you know, it's a really beautiful question because it is only Monday. It's really making me reflect on this one day and the weekend that's gone before it, right? I don't have a lot of runway to answer the question, which is really nice, actually, because what it's actually making me do, Mark, is think about the freedom of my relationship with my wife, Jackie. So she and I are on an incredible journey of joining dots in the outside world as much as being together in a relationship for over 12 years. And I'm finding that as I open up and as I explore and as she gets curious, we're able to have different types of conversations and relationships that I never dreamed would ever be able to have. And that happened again this past weekend. So that gives me a sense of freedom that there is no barrier, there is no fear to discuss anything with my closest and most intimate human being. And if I bring it to a workspace, I just absolutely love the like it's Monday again. And we get the chance to completely etch a sketch the next week that's ahead of us. It doesn't matter what happened on Friday. It doesn't matter what's going to happen tomorrow. We've got complete and utter choice how we show up and what we do within the next minute, hour, 24 hours, next week. And that's what I love about Mondays. Mm. So I've got feel a lot of freedom around that.
Nice. See, I knew I'd get a good answer from you. It's amazing. Yeah, I love that. I love that. I mean, the sense of the conversations that you're able to have with Jackie reminds me of the importance of being able to kind of really be your full self, really, and not to... I've met so many people over my career who have these two different personas in many respects. There's the work mark and there's the family mark or the home mark or the personal mark, whatever you think about, which I've always struggled with. I remember kind of very senior executives having that conversation. It's like, well, this is just how I've had to be, and I don't want to bring parts of my, kind of more personal side into the work side because I'm not sure whether how people will react to it. So, that can be, I remember saying to people, that must be exhausting for you every day having to kind of, create those false barriers in some respects, but there's a lot tied up in that. So it's great that we're able to do that. So yeah, I love it. That's great. So Freedom at Work Conference. So we met at this event and you were lucky enough to win the Freedom at Work Spirit Award. So congratulations on that again. But I wonder if we could just use that as a bit of a segue. I know you kind of Freedom of Work is just one of a number of hats that you wear, but use that as a bit of an opportunity just to share a bit of information about what Freedom at Work's all about. And then I just thought we'd explore the model for a little bit and then kind of more curiously perhaps understand how relevant is that to the world of work that we're experiencing these days. So yeah, tell us a bit more about Freedom at Work, if you wouldn't mind.
No, definitely, Mark. And thanks for that opportunity again. So Freedom at Work is a model that's been developed by Tracy Fenton, who's founder and CEO of a company called World Blue. And what it is, in essence, is there's a lot of organizational design models, right? Whether you do McKinsey, Seven Star, there's a lot of ways of trying to organize your business structurally. And what I found with Tracy and World Blue, why I think it's so different, is they're really looking at a combination of mindset, leadership, and organizational design. And by intentionally designing around these 10 democratic principles, that then allows a freedom-centered culture to emerge. So it's very much about the intentionality of the design mindset and leadership. And that then gives you this freedom-centered culture as an outcome. So freedom at work, in essence, is the result of doing a lot of really intentional design on the front end. And it can lead, whether it's a 10-person company or an 80,000-person company, to extraordinary results. So I'd say that was it in a nutshell, Mark.
Yeah, perfect. No, that's great summary. Yeah, the exceptional results that are pretty compelling, and we'll put some links in the show notes so people can explore in their own way. But I went to the conference, Gary's suggestion, with my CEO. We had a good few days together, really just as an opportunity to kind of explore the model in a bit more detail and understand what it is all about. And it struck me as something which I thought was quite compelling for that very reason, because it does structure it in a way that almost starts with the individual and starts with the individual's kind of mindset. And the bit that I remember is this distinction between, if we think about freedom, or what's the opposite of freedom, and it is people living with fear, this idea of kind of a fear-based kind of mindset. And in that situation, people aren't necessarily kind of doing the work that they're not turning up in the way that perhaps they would want to. Am I remembering that correctly in terms of what you mean by fear-based?
Absolutely.
So I think it's, kind of creates a big opportunity, but it's a big shift for people as well. And then we move on to the model moves on to talk about the importance of leadership. And then, as you say, thinking about kind of freedom-centered design. So why do you think this is something that's of interest to organizations these days. I guess I'm curious, Gary, what are you seeing in the world that perhaps makes something like this quite compelling as a proposition?
Yes, there's a few things, you know, and I always like to look at, as you know me well enough, as you said, you know, I like to look at things systemically, i.e. what's going on in the macro world, what's going on within ourselves as individuals, as you mentioned, and also what's going on within organizations, which of course are combinations of people, right? And I think we're realizing very quickly, particularly in the West, you know, North America, you know, Canada, Europe, et cetera, we're realizing that we can't compartmentalize human beings into structures, but also we can't untangle the impact that each one of us and our organizations have on the biosphere, on the Amazon, for example, or on people in the global South in communities, right? So in the past, we've seen these things as very separate, mm-hmm. and it's been, whether it's accidental or by design, we've not joined those dots. We're just very busy being busy doing what we need to do. And that's, you know, that's life.
Right.
And I think what the opportunity is with something like what World Blue and Freedom at Work are offering is really giving the opportunity to join dots in a new way. So through your business, still get fantastic results as an outcome, but it allows you to see and almost be more conscious in how you design, how you lead, how you think. And you can start to look well beyond the metaphorical walls of your organization towards your impact, well mm-hmm. beyond your day-to-day activities. Now, this is not something necessarily that Tracy or World Blue would say. It's very much Gary's view on the world. And I think that's why I'm so passionate about what they're doing, because I can see potentiality that goes well beyond just the model, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it does. It does make sense. I guess the question would be, though, is almost like, do organizations care in some respects? Because it feels like there is this kind of conscious, there is a link, you know, kind of the ripple effect of what an organization does is going to impact the broader society in some way. So if we're able to kind of put more of a focus on that, a spotlight on that, and make people or encourage people to make more conscious decisions, then that seems a good outcome. But I guess the if I'm being cynical for a second, which I don't spend much time being cynical, but if I'm being cynical for a second, is like, do organizations care? Do they care about the impact they're potentially having on broader society, do you think?
I'm glad you are cynical. A rare Mark cynical moment, because it's a constructive challenge, right? And it's an important one. Yeah. I think, so to answer the question, not enough leaders and organizations care yet. But I think what we're seeing is part of these crises that are all unfolding, whether you look at politics, what's happening in Gaza, whether it's recruiting talent, right? All of these things are intersectional. They're all linked to each other somehow, somewhere in the world.
Yeah.
And I think if I bring it back to business specifically, CEOs and senior leaders are realizing that actually, if we can't speak to diversity inclusion in a genuine, non-performative way, if we can't actually show that we really care about the biosphere and the planet and leaving something that's habitable for my kids and grandkids, these 20, 30, 40-year-olds that are coming through, they will choose with their feet where they work.
Right.
And the leaders that are our age and above are starting to have to reckon with that, Mark. So I think there's a little bit of a... So we're really at the tip of an iceberg, I think, and I think we're going to see a lot more people having to care. But equally, to be fair, there are more and more people that want to care. And I think a combination of those two things we'll see quite quickly over the next 3 to 5 years, a shift towards this sort of thinking. I really do believe that.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I'm kind of curious on the timelines. It feels hard to kind of judge what that might be, because in some ways these things feel as though they go, I mean, you and I have been in the workforce a similar period of time, but seem to go at a kind of glacially slow pace. But at the same time, we see big kind of shifts, and, you know, like you did during the pandemic, et cetera. But the kind of almost bottom-up pressure on organizations, as well as more people starting to think about that, who are in leadership roles and being able to influence that. And, you know, as you know, you had the opportunity to meet Iggy. I feel fortunate that we have a CEO who thinks very much along those lines. Mm-hmm. But I guess, you know, it's smart for the World Blue folks and the Freedom at Work folks to also build a very compelling business case around this as well. So the kind of financials are there to back up this thinking if people aren't kind of doing it for conscious reasons as well. So that it feels like it's a bit of a two-prong attack, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And it still surprises me, you know, the results that they've done. I'll just mention it very quickly for those that are senior leaders or CEOs, right? What we're talking about, we're talking seven times the S&P 500 during the point at which they modeled their, you know, the average World Blue company versus the average S&P 500 over that period of time. There was a 7x increase in performance following this model. So, you know, it is very clever that they've got the evidence, and it's also the right thing to do for people, planet, and profit in the end. So, yeah, it's very compelling. It's very, very compelling.
Yeah, it's really compelling. And there's a bit of a roadmap there as well. So maybe just to explore a couple of the elements of the framework to bring it to life for people. So as you outlined, the freedom center design provides a framework with 10 characteristics or principles. So it includes things, many of the words will be familiar to the audience, but things like purpose and vision, integrity, transparency, to name just a few. One of the elements I remember talking about was the idea of decentralization and choice, which certainly resonated with me for a number of reasons. One, you know, because I think a lot about the importance of empowering people and giving them choice and that part of it. And they were giving examples of organizations, you know, real case studies of organizations who've taken the opportunity for people to choose job titles, to choose managers and teams that they're part of. I think the most extreme one, which might make HR people frown for a second, was the one around choosing your own salary as well, which I found interesting. But why do you think kind of decentralization and choice is so important? I'm curious to get your view on that.
Yeah, so it's a really great question, Mark. And I see the two as very linked, right? And I think decentralization is a precursor to healthy choices. So if we're decentralizing power, it doesn't mean CHROs like yourself or the CEO. It doesn't mean you end up with sort of madness taking place within the organization. It just means that you are being that coach as a leader that we all know is the right way to go to unleash the potential of your people, right? And decentralization is a great lever or a practice, you know, decentralizing power, putting it to the people, moving more towards self-organized, self-managed teams, et cetera. Mm-hmm. That then with it brings, important point here, accountability and choice. And I think this is the thing that when I hear a lot of these conversations about more progressive ways of organizing or leading or performing, we don't often hear about that word enough. And I think it's really important to go, you know, this isn't a free-for-all. It's not without accountability. You know, you get great results, as we discussed, because there's accountability to one another rather than to a single godlike figure. And I think that's where decentralization's taking more organizations. And with that then comes a lot more options, a lot more innovation, a lot more creativity, because people aren't deferring to the single person within the organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So strikes me as one of those things, be careful what you wish for, because there's probably a much greater level of accountability in those sorts of organizations than you'd experience perhaps in a more traditional hierarchical organization. And like we know, it's always kind of tough when like a peer, one of your kind of mates or friends kind of, or somebody who's working for you kind of picks you up on something. So you've got kind of potentially accountability from coming up from all angles as well, haven't you, in that environment? So.
Yeah, it's a great, if I may say, Mark, it's a great example, because even within one of my chemical industry clients, I saw firsthand when we actually ran an experiment over 3 years of moving to more of a decentralized structure, the paralysis and the fear of the people that weren't used to it. So we thought the guy I was working with and I thought we were creating like the perfect culture. There it is, freedom, go and do what you want. And they were just stuck. They were like, no, I need you to, they didn't say it, but they acted. I need you to tell me what to do. They did not know how to operate in that environment. And that was really intriguing.
Well, I mean, for organizations that are thinking about, or you know, even just individual leaders who are thinking about empowering their team more or giving their team more choice, what would be your kind of advice based on maybe that experience? What should we be thinking about if we do want to go down that route?
Yeah, so I would say it's literally shared accountability. Right. So it's almost like having doesn't have to be a formal contract. It's not something to be performance managed, but it's literally here's a Google Doc, and we commit to one another on the team that I will act like this, I will deliver that, and you do the same. So we're all really clear where our accountability is to one another, and we've got the right to hold each other to account, literally. So if you're going off that, or you don't deliver by the time that we agreed, we'll have an adult conversation about why that happened. You need help. So it just becomes much more adults, basically. You get away from this paternalistic, which we see a lot in hierarchy, right? You go to paternalism. So it just keeps it a lot more mature, I would say, is the point.
But it feels like people kind of maybe choose that fear word again, they're a bit fearful of of that because they feel it's going to end up having a really difficult conversation. And those difficult conversations, it might feel a bit confrontational and they can be really difficult to do and don't seem something that people will necessarily lean into. But if it's all written down, then I think that gives you a basis for not making it personal. It's like, well, this is, and therefore it becomes easier. You're not kind of attacking somebody. You've got the facts laid out in front of you in some respects, haven't you?
No, 100%. And that then comes with it, a practice or a ritual, right? So the more we practice it, we build that muscle, right, the more comfortable it gets to do. So
Yeah. I think it feels really important. I mean, many of a Foresight podcast will talk about hybrid work, and there's examples there, I think, of really being clear about what the accountabilities are if it comes to working remotely and what you're expected to do, etc. So I think it ties into all sorts of different things as well in terms of how that comes to life. I was kind of curious, Gary, just as you go about doing your work, are there other examples of work that you've seen or examples of things that you've seen which you feel, you used the word progressive earlier, which I really like, so kind of things that other more progressive organizations are doing. I'm just curious what examples you've seen that really resonated for you.
Well, one's really interesting. You know, I've got a bit of a bias towards what I call the extractive industries. So it's gas, it's oil, it's, you know, pharmaceuticals, food. So those were really extracting raw materials, right? That's my long time of my history, as you know. There's a brilliant example of a company called Latro, based in Turkey, who have literally gone from traditional hierarchy. It's SME, they're about 20 million turnover. But the CEO fired themselves, Mark. Mm. So this is an entrepreneur, Haluk. He was just like, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm all about growing business, building people. And he realized that the business had grown to such a level that his own he's self-aware enough to go, oh my God, people are deferring to me. People are starting to ask me questions that they didn't ask me last year. And he started getting, by his own admission, a bit more egotistical. He had his own space for his own car. He had the office in the corner, all the traditional stuff. But he was self-aware enough to go, this is not who I am. This is not what I want to be doing. So he fired himself and they moved fully to self-management. And this in an extractive industry where safety is physical safety is one of the most important characteristics.
Right.
That to me is one of the most radical, if not just progressive moves. And their performance went then from 10 million to 18 million in the next 18 months because they completely unleashed creativity and innovation in a way that was being blocked by accident almost.
Yeah. Yeah. By fascinating sense of hierarchy. And I think you've shared that story with me before. I think there's a video that kind of explains that story a little bit, isn't there? I think we can put in the show notes. But and just to be clear, the CEO fired himself and didn't replace himself with somebody who was equally in a CEO-type role. He used that as an opportunity to essentially, you know, kind of blow up the organization in some respects in terms of shifting to self-managed teams where there was a lot of choice, etc. So
exactly.
Is that easy to do you think?
I don't think it is easy to do at all. And so Haluk, the CEO, self-fired CEO in question. So I had two conversations with him on my platforms and he's very open. It's not easy. You know, you need help. You know, we're all human, right? We've all got an ego to an extent and we need help, you know, but having that level of vulnerability, you know, something we spoke about quite a bit when we were together, you know, the vulnerability to know you don't have all the answers, the vulnerability to know you don't need control of everything. You know, if you can, and it comes back to the mindset piece, you know, if you look at World Blues work again for a moment, that's why the mindset bit is critical. And I think, in honest opinion, I think that's why we see so many of the continuous challenges around engagement, Gallup stats, you know, nothing's moving, right? Not really. Right. It's glacial, to use your language from earlier. I think that's because people are focusing on design and they're focusing on leadership development. They hardly ever focus on mindset. It's one of my biggest bugbears in the working world. I hardly hear anybody talking about, let's sit down. What do you think about yourself? Where's your self-worth? You know, there's so many, like no one actually has those grand ad hoc conversations because it's painful. It can be hard. But like, so that to me, and that's where Haluk was very strong. He was able to look in the mirror and get help with that whilst re-engineering the organization. But he had to want to do it from the inside out. That's the critical point.
Yeah.
And I think that was the gift for them.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating, I think. And I think you're dead on with the idea of really encouraging people to think about mindset. That's something that I'm debating internally with my team at the moment as we think about our own leaders and how we support them most effectively. And yeah, if I'm honest, I think there's a bit of reticence to do that internally because it's really hard to do. I think there is, you know, it's very hard for the individual to do, and it's not something that you are going to see kind of instant results on in many respects, because people, the very nature of that kind of work is you're dealing with every single individual and having that, creating an opportunity for them to kind of reflect on who they are, really, which I know sounds a bit philosophical, but it is, it's designed mm-hmm. to be, you know, it's kind of people to really think about what's their purpose in life. And, you know, in this case for us, it's, is your purpose to be a people first leader for people at Wajax, and kind of exploring what that means. But it's so important to do that work, which but it's going to be really hard to do as well. So yeah, good on. I think these stories are interesting because it shows you that there is examples out there that you can draw upon, but then it's kind of picking the bits that are most relevant to you. There's somebody said to me once, it's not about best practices, it's about right practices. So I think just learning from these things, and it sounds from that example, your kind of a big takeaway from you was it's the example of thinking about mindset and kind of really encouraging people to have that conversation. So
yeah, and it's so beautifully stated, because the other thing for me as well, Mark, is you need to slow down for this stuff as well, right? And this is the thing, again, we're conditioned fast, quick, hard, heavy, build, grow, acquire, like everything's about speed. Mm. And this work requires stopping sometimes.
Right.
And like telling an exec team or a senior leadership team or middle management, you just got to stop. We're going to do it for 2 whole days.
Right. Like,
that's where the fear kicks in.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's just kind of slow down and just take the time. It's where those moments happen for people to get that clarity. Yeah, but we are wired to not necessarily think like that, which is, again, ties into the whole kind of societal interconnectedness of all of this as well. So not to kind of lead the witness too much here, but if there was one thing that an organization could think about, if they're interested in, I'm going to use different language here, interested in being more progressive, would it be thinking about mindset, or would you have different advice for an organization?
I would say mindset's what opens the sort of the space in people's minds, literally mindset. You know, it's literally the aperture to look at everything else, right? So we definitely need to come through. Okay, let's be curious. So my invitation would be, you know, what if you could rate yourself as a CEO or a senior leader or a HR leader, between one being I hardly ever am curious, I'm just literally reacting, and 10 being I'm continuously looking for innovation, creativity, new relationships, new connections. If you rate yourself 1 to 10 on that level of curiosity, that I think is a great starting point, Mark, to then be able to go, right, okay, if I'm not at all curious, then how do I develop that muscle? Because without curiosity, without innovation, without creativity, everything else is going to be futile, if I'm completely honest. So I think the mindset piece is critical. Mm. And I think in particular, understanding A, self-worth, and B, level of curiosity. If you can evaluate those two things in yourself and then do that in your immediate team, that's going to be a huge catalyst. Don't spend billions on a leadership development program yet. Don't bring McKinsey in to redesign your organization. Please start here, because you will get way better results far quicker, even if it takes a bit of time to tee that up. That'd be my advice, Mark.
I love that advice, Gary. I think that's very powerful in bringing together what people need to do. And I see the value. It's helped me to think about how I position this with my team as we think about mindset as well. So I appreciate that. Really important.
Good.
So if people are interested in learning more about the world of Gary Turner, how can they best get in touch?
Yeah, so LinkedIn's probably the easiest way, although I do have a link tree, which is this very funky thing where you've got lots of different links.
I've seen those, yeah.
Yeah, so I've got a link tree. I'll be terrible and actually can't even recite it at the moment. If I can share it with you, maybe you don't mind putting it in your show notes. But yeah, Gary Turner Thinking Partner on LinkedIn is probably the best and easiest place to find me. And I'm always, as you know, always open for exploratory chats, very, very open to generative conversations, never with any ulterior motive, but if things go places, they go places. So,
yeah, no, 100%. I can attest to it's very much how things work with Gary, which is always a pleasure. Gary, we end with a feel good. So curious what you're feeling good about right now.
I don't want to be too cheesy, but I'm going to be cheesy. I'm feeling really good about having the last half an hour with Mark Edgar. Like, that's the genuine truth, because I'm thinking as well about the questions you've asked, and I'm reflecting on actually, yeah, what am I seeing and not seeing in this moment based on the conversation we just had? So I just see it as being an incredibly generative 30 minutes, and I'm genuinely grateful to you for it. So thank you.
Amazing. I'll take that feel good. The cash is in the post, as they say. But I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Excellent. Well, thanks, Gary. Thank you very much for taking the time out of your busy agenda with all those different hats that you wear. Thank you very much to listening to this episode of Foresight the Podcast. Please do share it with a friend and give us a rating if you enjoyed the episode. And we look forward to seeing you next week. Thanks, everybody. See you soon.
Thanks for listening to Foresight. If you enjoyed the episode, we would love to hear from you. Leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Your ratings and reviews also help more people like you find our show so that we can reach more future forward leaders and achieve our mission of making work better.
Follow us on Instagram and LinkedIn at Future Forward and sign up for our weekly newsletter, Foresight, on our website, futureforward.com.
That's FutureForward.com, where we share even more about the new world of work.
Talk to you next week.